Benioff, I think, is really has the archetypal example, at least in the B2B world, of sort of modern SaaS selling of, hey, here is this new world where we're going to be getting our software through a browser, through the cloud. And this old world of software is, not going to do it for you, where you're maintaining it and all the hassles and all the rest.
Hi, this is Josh, and you are listening to the Inside Selling Podcast, a podcast about selling without selling your soul, where I explore how you can make selling more delightful for yourself and for your prospects by helping them be more awesome and making them smile every time you talk to them. Today, my guest, Andy Raskin, who helps companies get their story straight, which is valuable if you want to, sell more things or raise money. Andy got on my radar because I, along with about a bazillion other people, read his awesome post on Medium called The Greatest Sales Deck I've Ever Seen. And if you haven't read that yet, what are you doing listening to this podcast? Jump off right now and read that thing. He, in that article, outlines five elements of an effective narrative, which we're going to speak about today. He's also the author of, and this is not something I'm saying incorrectly, The Ramen King and I, where he spent 3 years trying to meet the creator of the ramen noodles. So that's a pretty interesting fact. Andy, thank you so much for carving out some time to chat today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me on the show, Josh.
So Andy, take us back. 5 years or so ago, you sort of pivot your career into focusing on helping companies tell better stories. Of all the things you could be doing, Andy, ramen noodles, all the other things you got going on, why telling better stories?
Well, it actually was a pivot back to my roots. So I started out as a software developer. I was a computer science major in college. I raised money for a startup back in the dot-com days. And I had worked as a journalist for a few years, in part because I got really interested in the role of storytelling in business, and just storytelling in general and how you craft them and all this. And I was working, after my role as a journalist, I was working at a startup that came out of Y Combinator as the interim VP of marketing. I'd already kind of pivoted back to this tech world. And after about a year, that company was acquired. And I said to the CEO, hey, was it worth hiring me? Was it worth the money you paid me? And he's a pretty straightforward guy. And he said, yes. And I believed him. And I said, so why? Could you sum it up? And he said, you got our story straight. And this was something that I had always wanted to do, to really focus on. And it was what I focused on in that engagement. But I never really believed anyone's really going to pay me for this. besides some token, like, this is not a career. So I said, really? Like, if I told you at the beginning of this engagement, like, I'm going to charge you this and this much stock and I'm going to get your story straight, would you have signed on for that? And he said, yes. And I still say, I don't know. I don't really know if I believe that. And so he sent a note out to the founders of Y Combinator, to a list on that group, and kind of explained, what we did together and what happened. And that wound up leading to the first few engagements that I did. And that kind of led me down this path, which is to be working on this as a career.
So what was it about this story that he found so valuable?
I think that in our, that company was a loyalty marketing company. So we ran loyalty programs for a lot of retailers. And like a lot of us, we're facing a very crowded space. A lot of competitors doing the same thing, saying the same thing. The traditional approach to this is, how to stand out is what I call the differentiation brag. So we're gonna essentially say, well, we're better because we're different in this way, but really what we're really saying is we're better in this way. And we're gonna just say, well, because we offer these features that are better or this that's better. It's basically a brag. And
So what's wrong? So Andy, let's talk about that. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with saying, hey, we are the best, software company if you're in the market for software that does this. You know, we are Harley Davidson. We're the best motorcycle company for people that like loud motorcycles.
Yeah. You know, I think that there are two things that I think are a challenge sometimes. One is that there are now, you know, the speed at which innovation happens means that competitors can pretty much copy your better, cheaper, faster features overnight. This is particularly true in the software world, but you know, now that everything is becoming software, it's even more true everywhere. So, you know, I think to be skeptical, people are just now naturally skeptical. Really, are you really that different from these other folks? Because they can probably spin up, you know, a cloud instance and, you know, use some coding framework to probably, you know, duplicate your features if they want. You know, so that's one thing is this sort of speed of innovation change. And I think the other is that there are just so many more competitors in a category. And that's related to the first one. You know, there's so many people screaming about how they're better and why. And, you know, whereas in the past, if you had three or four competitors to Harley Davidson or whoever, you know, and, you know, you could maybe reasonably expect people to kind of, you know, suss out those claims and decide if they were true. And now it's almost impossible for people to do that.
Understood. So as we start to talk about story rather than a sentence that differentiates, we're talking, you know, Harley Davidson, we're the best if you like loud motorcycles. Your approach is to tell a story. A lot of people define stories so many different ways. Talk to me about how you define it and how it's materially different from the differentiation that we're typically used to seeing.
I think the differentiation we're used to seeing is also a kind of story, but who's the main character of that story?
The company, you know, yeah, the company typically.
Right. You know, so we do this, we talk about a problem we solve, but we don't really, you know, the problem is kind of static. Like the users have it. It's just kind of a, you know, where it came from, why it matters to solve it is not really addressed in that story. And when I'm working with leadership teams, the story that we're trying to tell is, it puts the customer, the potential buyer, in the place of the main character. So we cast the customer as the main character. And then we're telling the story about what's changing in that person's life that's creating stakes, meaning opportunity and risk, such that they have to act.
And you kind of mentioned in one of your talks this parallel between a story and Star Wars. Is that how you think about it, where you're putting the company essentially in place of like a Luke Skywalker in Star Wars as he's battling to be able to kill the Death Star? Is that how you think about structuring story?
Yeah, well, a lot of my initial education about story comes from reading screenwriting books, something that I basically didn't know much about. And, you know, Star Wars is a very archetypal story structure. And yeah, except, you know, you said, you know, so who is the, who maps to Luke in the company story? So one of the things that's so fascinating to me is, you know, what of that sort of screenwriting stuff applies? Because we're not building a three-act screenplay here. We're building a sales pitch. But yes, we do want to think of that customer as Luke. And, you know, what's happening to Luke? Luke starts off in a kind of, you know, he's on this sand planet, at least in, you know, the New Hope. He's on the sand planet. Things are kind of equilibrium, like his life is sort of set. And then something happens that kind of jars reality. You know, we get this, this Obi-Wan shows up, and there's this message about the princess being rescued and this Death Star that's coming. So there's this whole big change in the world. And I do like to think about the company as kind of like Obi-Wan. Or like Gandalf in the Lord of the Rings, or if you've seen Moana, Moana's grandma plays this role in Moana. This character that is kind of kind of bringing the new reality to our to the customer, to the main character, and pointing out, hey, we're going to have to take some action here because there are some really, really big things at stake. And then, of course, also furnishing that person with what I like to call the gifts. So in Star Wars, the lightsaber, in your company, the product or service or whatever capabilities you're gonna add.
Yeah, totally. There was a great cartoon a while back from User Onboard where it showed Mario Brothers, and you know, Mario Brothers jumped on a flower, and that flower had the fireball. The fireball was the thing that allowed him to kill the monsters. And the analogy was your customer's Mario, the flower is your product, and the fireball is what you allow them to do better. It's the thing that gives them the strength to kill the monster. And I think that sounds like it's your point. It's like your product is the lightsaber, and how you make, and your job is to make Luke stronger to be able to defeat Darth Vader, essentially.
Yeah, and then, but there's this also this big setup thing that happens to explain even why, you know, Mario or the Luke is even on this mission in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I think when you see the companies that do the story really well, like Zora, which you mentioned, I wrote about in that piece, The Greatest Sales Deck I've Ever Seen, or another one I think is really great at it, Drift.
Yeah.
Drift. I wrote another piece about showing how Drift uses pretty much the same structure in their story. They're starting not from sort of the problem, which is sort of the typical way to do it, but they're starting from this kind of shift in the world that that if the customer agrees, yeah, the world is changing this way, then we can start to say, okay, well, then how do you have to adapt?
So yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. Is it similar, Andy, to, you know, I remember when Steve Jobs talked about the first iPhone, he sort of was not talking about the Motorola or specific phones. He was talking about the problem with the category. If you remember that memorable scene where he said, you know, the problem really is with the bottom third, essentially the keyboard. Is that what you're referring to? It's like, this is what's wrong in the world, regardless of our product. This is a trend happening in the marketplace.
Yeah, you know, I've watched that one many times, and he really starts by saying, hey, you know, we have the internet, we have the, sort of like mobile music, and we now have, and we have this sort of note-taking assistant, kind of like what the Palm Pilot was, you know, back in the day, and he's talking about like, you know, what if, you know, we have all these things we want to do. And then he says, yes, look at what we have out there. Doesn't this suck? I mean, he's someone who can kind of get away with saying, doesn't this suck? I'm not saying recommending that in general, but his starting point is not, hey, look at this great new thing. His starting point is, hey, look at what's changing in the world. You know, he does that every time, even back to the original iMac introduction. He's saying, hey, we have this new thing called the internet, we all want to get on it, and hey, look at what it takes on the current computers. They're really not, you know, made for this. That's why we made this new one specifically to help you, you know, slay that monster.
Is that something like similar to what Mark Benioff did back in the day with no more computers or something like that, as he was moving to the cloud? He almost picked on a category?
Yeah, he did no software.
No software, right.
And that started, they had, when they were first launching Salesforce, they had a bunch of Salesforce people go to an Oracle convention with picket signs, with the, you know, word software with a circle slash through it. And I'm sure to a lot of people that was a little bit weird. Like, what do you mean no software? Like, you know, Salesforce is making software too. But I think you hit it exactly right. You know, Benioff, I think, is really the has the archetypal example, at least in the B2B world, of sort of modern SaaS selling of, hey, here is this new world where we're going to be getting our software through a browser, through the cloud. And this old world of software, it's, you know, not going to do it for you, where you're maintaining it and all the hassles and all the rest.
And so the example you brought up of Drift, and Drift's example is, you know, no more forms, essentially, right? People want to interact in real time through email or through chat. They're picking on this form world that's no longer going to be a thing. Is that how they're starting
exactly
their story?
Exactly. And what I find so fascinating about it is, you know, but even by the time Drift launched, there's probably like, I'm going to say like 10 or 15 other, you know, similar kind of chat solutions out there, but nobody else is telling the story in the way they are. In from the CEO on down to all the, you know, the content they're building, they're just constantly hitting on it. Even every one of their product releases is essentially, they're framing it exactly as you framed it.
So I want to go through this, Andy. I want to go through these elements, right? So it sounds like the first element is, what do you have a label for this first element where we're setting up this first part of the story, which is there's a change in the world?
Yeah, so I like to say, can we name the change in the world? So name the change, which is about, you know, what is the new world and what was that old world? So like you said, one of the great examples is cloud. We're now in the world of the cloud, and the old world was software. We're now in the subscription economy, is Juarez, and the old world was product economy, where we're buying things one-off and owning them. With Drift, you know, we were in the world of forms. We're going to expect people to give us their information, and we'll, you know, make them wait until we deign to tell them that they're worthy of our interaction. And in the new world, where, you know, people can sort of interact when they want to.
Got it. And we saw this a little bit even in the dating scene, right? Like the whole Tinder versus Match thing, essentially. Similar, I guess, similar pattern.
Yeah, there's. I think these shifts happen in every category, every industry. You know, the B2B ones are the places where, you know, a person has to tell the story in a sale. The B2C ones, sometimes the product itself kind of has to embody that. So it's, it has to be in that. But I think you're right.
So once I set that up, what's part two? After I've said there's a change happening in the world, if we use Drift as an example, what happens after? What's like the next chapter of the story, I guess?
So we want to show, just like in a movie, we want to show that there are stakes, that the change is causing stakes for the person we're talking to. So, you know, if in Star Wars, the Death Star is out there and Luke is somehow protected and nothing's going to happen to him, well, we don't really have a story and we walk out of the movie. and in the same way, you know, with the prospects we're talking to, most of them, as I'm sure you talk about, like, have this kind of love of the status quo, you know. So we have to show that there's some real price to be paid for staying with the status quo, and some opportunity to be gained by kind of adapting to this new world.
Yeah.
So what are those things?
One of the things you did really, I thought, Andy, when I was researching you, people often ask me, well, how do I find that out? You know, I call it, you have to show that the world is no longer safe that they're in. And I thought you had a really good perspective, which is, well, you actually talk to customers.
Yeah. I often will ask them, you know, so what is this? What is changing in your world that's creating the stakes? And then what are those stakes? Sometimes I'll ask it in the form of like, how does that create a new way to win? Or how does that create a new way to, you know, how is that, you know, potentially risky for you? Things like that. And yeah, like often the customers will just say, they'll give us the messaging and the sales pitch just straight out, like much better than we could have gotten it if we just sort of sat in a room and tried to think about it.
Totally. All right. So we have part two, which is what's at stake. And then what's part three?
So then I like to say, to call attention to, before we get into any product details still, what is kind of the gate? What does the finish line look like to adapting to this new world? Sometimes I call it the gate to the promised land. So, you know, in Star Wars, to use that analogy again, at least in the first movie, if Luke and his band of friends can destroy the Death Star, then it's game over in a good way. You know, they win, they've saved the universe from badness, in at least for that first movie. And what is that for the customer in this new world? So what do they have to get to? So in Zwora's story, they say, hey, we're in this new subscription economy. The stakes are that if you're back, you know, you're still selling products, you're going to probably be gone. If you're doing subscription, you're going to be thriving. And they show examples of both those cases. And then they say, hey, so can you deliver the subscription experience? And so they define this thing called the subscription experience, which is not just a monthly bill, but some other things that, you know, they sort of define as that, and say, okay, this is the finish line. Another great example is Airbnb. They have this phrase, live there. So if you can live there, they've really, really boiled it down into this thing. Hey, if you can live there, then you get all the, you win. You get the happy vacation, happy family, all the, all this stuff, right? And I think, you know, some people call this a tagline. I don't like that because it doesn't really express the kind of story work, the narrative work that this, this stuff has to do. So I like to call it sort of the, what is that gate to the promised land? What do you have to achieve in order to win?
It's almost like you're trying to imagine what it would be like to win. And you're using a very visceral words to be able to picture yourself in that better state.
I'm giving them a state that they have to reach.
Yep.
Say, hey, you have to be able to live there. You have to be able to deliver the subscription experience. And what we want to say, you know, I don't usually put it in those phrasing in those terms. Usually phrase it, you know, what if you could deliver the subscription experience? What if you could live there?
Got it.
Like that.
Right. For someone like me who's trying to finish a triathlon without crawling across the finish line, it might be, what if you can cross the finish line with dignity without throwing up, and they could take your picture and it looks good on Facebook?
I've been there. So yeah, I know. Yeah. I've wanted that promised land for myself a few times. Yes.
All right, great. So now part four.
So this promised land, if we design it well, it should be desirable, obviously, but also should be pretty hard to reach without some help. Because if it is, you know, if Luke can just destroy the Death Star, we don't have a movie. If the customer can just live there on their own or deliver the subscription experience on their own, well, we don't really have a reason for a company. So we know that there are obstacles. And what are these obstacles? What are the monsters along the way? The fighters, you know, the things that have to be overcome in order to get there, in order to get to this promised land. So I want to list those out.
Mm-hmm. So these are things that if you were to try to do this yourself without help, this is what you'd bump into. So if I were to train for a triathlon without a coach, I might keel over and pass out. I might be dehydrated. I might cramp. I might pull my knee out. All sorts of bad things might happen to me.
And also potentially, if you tried to do it with those other coaches.
Right, you know, right.
What might happen there, right? And then we want to slay these monsters. Mm. So now is the time we want to bring in. Well, so now let me tell you about how we will help you, you know, get to the finish line, how we help you overcome each of those issues, how we help you slay the monsters.
And Andy, last question about this. How does this manifest itself for companies? Is this something that they put on their website in the About Us? Is it on their homepage? What do they do with this story? How do they use it, I guess?
This is a great question. And I'm still learning myself about how these pieces, you know, kind of map to all the different you know, piece of essentially collateral that we are going to have to put out there. I like to start with the sales deck, kind of the narrative flow at a kind of high level. So almost thinking like as the CEO is presenting, you know, what is the sort of sales narrative that they would have? And that gets, of course, sometimes crunched down a little bit or distilled if, you know, you're doing like a first call with, you know, a lower level persona or something like that. But very frequently, you know, one thing I found, for instance, is like this promised land message is a very often just really makes a lot of sense as that first, that most prominent message on your website, you know, live there, deliver the subscription experience. For a while's war, change it. They had, turn your customers into subscribers. So if you could do that, you win. Right? So, these pieces, often there's not a lot of room let's say on a website, you know, to list all the monsters, for instance. So sometimes we'll just list the, you know, the capabilities, but the monsters are kind of implied. Maybe we talk about the monsters in where we have more room, like in content marketing or an actual sales pitch or other places. But you know, the idea is that this is story structure is like a platform that's guiding all of the communication we're doing, you know, where it's appropriate.
Andy Raskin, you've said it all, and we didn't even get to ramen noodles. We'll have to have you back. Andy, if people want to get a hold of you and they need help getting their story straight, how can they contact you?
They can just go to my website, andyraskin.com. And also, if you live in San Francisco, I teach a monthly class at General Assembly that a lot of folks have told me they find valuable. I'll be doing it in New York in October also. So starting to take that one out on the road as well. My website, andyraskin.com, is a great place to find me.
Andy, thank you so much for being so generous with your time and for sharing so many knowledge bombs with the audience.
Well, it was such a pleasure to talk to you, Josh. Thanks for having me on. It was great to be on your show.